It's not Thanksgiving, but there are a bunch of turkeys flying around right now. We'll talk about that next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Well, to that intro, I say...
Yes, and there are quite a few people who wish that that was the only thing that they had to say about that intro.
That's right.
but sadly enough, turkeys aren't just covered with feathers and are good with cranberry sauce. There are turkeys flying all over the place, Chuck, and we're going to talk about some of those in a few minutes. But I think, first of all, we need to address, and again, this is fairly early on, so there's not a boatload of information out there, but what information has come out so far per our recording date,
which is Wednesday,
is that a terrorist attack was perpetrated in New York City on Tuesday. It looks like a Uzbekistan national who is in this country and has Ohio ties, Chuck, because I guess when he first came to the country, he was in Cuyahoga Heights. So that's a, you know, up in Cleveland area, and he was there, and he, I guess, opened a couple of businesses and then at some point moved to New York City. But this gentleman decided and had already planned this out and supposedly had done a number of dry runs on this particular effort to go along the Hudson River byway, and he rented a pickup truck from Home Depot, you know, because you can rent, like, for
sure,
job sites and things.
Yeah.
Well, he rented a truck, and he drove down this Hudson River byway, bikeway, whatever it is, and he opened fire on people. And as far as I can tell from the reports that we know so far, that at least 8 people were killed in the attack, and a number were injured because he also tried to ram the vehicle into people. And then he got out on foot, and he was making his way toward a school with weapons in hand, until a bystander who happened to have a concealed carry permit, which it must have been an out-of-towner, Chuck, because I didn't think they'd allowed it in New York City.
Well, I understand it was an off-duty cop.
Okay, so that may have been the case. I didn't see that part of it, so that would make sense. But this gentleman shot the alleged perpetrator in the buttocks and got him down, and so they were able to capture him. And it turns out that they also found a handwritten note inside the pickup truck stating that this was an attack supported by ISIS. That, yes, the type of attacks that have been happening in Paris and happening in London and happening in other parts of Europe are now more likely happening here in the United States. I think this is the first time that we've actually had a direct connect almost immediately between the perpetrator and ISIS forces.
Well, usually we have to go through a big long dance,
right,
where everybody denies everything, and then suddenly comes out and says, yeah, it was an ISIS attack, but, I'm already seeing this today, he's a lone wolf.
Well, there'll be that, but the problem is I think ISIS has already claimed it as one of theirs, so there isn't so much the lone wolf theory anymore. Now, I think it's very interesting because on this morning, as we're recording, this is on the 1st of November, President Trump decided he would up the ante a little bit, so he threw out a tweet. And, of course, a lot of people grimace and grit their teeth when they hear that Donald Trump is tweeting. But this time, I think his tweets are right on point, Chuck, because this is what he tweeted from @RealDonaldTrump Twitter account. Quote, "The terrorist came into our country..." Now, first of all, he's calling him a terrorist, so he's getting that right to start with.
Finally.
"The terrorist came into our country through what is called the, quote, diversity visa lottery program," unquote, "a Chuck Schumer beauty. I want merit-based," unquote. In other words, Schumer, the Senate minority leader from New York, interestingly enough, created this program and pushed it through Congress to basically create a lottery for getting a entry visa into the country based on diversity. In other words, not based upon the fact that this person has qualifications that are needed in industry or
and has been fully vetted.
His family here, you know, has people that are established, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No, it's all based on, well, we need a certain percentage of people from this ethnicity and a certain percentage of people from this country. And well, it looks like Chuck Schumer's efforts have created problems back home. I find it very ironic, sadly, but ironic, that this assailant chose not to do this attack in Ohio, where he first came to, but in New York City. Now, that's a problem for Chuck Schumer because he's a senator from New York.
New York, yeah.
I'm sure that that means that he's going to be very vulnerable when it comes time for re-election on this particular issue.
Mm.
But you
hold
know,
on. I don't think so.
Well, again, that you're starting to see a shift.
Well, Chuck, a little
across the board. It's slow, but it's shifting.
The New York battle is upstate. It's upstate versus
the city,
Albany and South.
Yep.
That is the battle in New York, and it's always upstate because upstate is very conservative, and Albany South, which is south to New York City, is ultra liberal.
Well, that is true. You've got that, but even ultra liberals may get upset if it's their kids and their family members that they're picking up off the concrete because they've got bullets in them from somebody who Chuck Schumer wanted to let in because of diversity.
Diversity, yeah.
So Schumer basically today responded to the president's allegations, assertions, whatever you want to call them, and I found it to be classic Chuck Schumer. He fired back from the Senate floor, accusing Trump of politicizing the tragedy. Okay, Chuck, what Chuck Schumer didn't do is deny that his visa program was the responsible reason for this guy being here.
It's a red herring.
It's a red herring.
It's a red herring fallacy. It's like, no, 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 look over there, see what he did. And in fact, what I heard, one of the quotes that I read was that he said George W. Bush wouldn't have handled it this way. Well, to that I agree, and that's why George W. Bush is not considered a great president
at this
point.
That's right. Now, Trump also tweeted that we're fighting hard for merit-based immigration, no more Democrat lottery systems. We must get much, and capital letters, much tougher and smarter than he says. So basically, Trump is like saying, okay, we can have immigration into this country from all of these other countries. You know, the lottery system, basically, what it was really designed for was saying, well, there are certain countries that the numbers of people coming into our country are just too low, and so we want to encourage more immigration from those countries. And of course, one of those was the breakaway former Soviet Republic of Uzbekistan,
which
when you hear the word Stan at the end of one of those Eastern European countries, I'll guarantee you it's majority Muslim.
Yes. Well, that word means home of.
Yes.
Uzbekistan is the home of the Uzbeks.
That's right.
So, and when you Pakistan's is the home of the Paks.
Right. And Afghanistan is the home of the Afghanis.
Yeah,
that's right. But by and large, it seems like any country in Central or Eastern Europe or Asia that has the Stan as the last part of the country name
is virtually all
majority Muslim nations.
Yeah.
And so we have now this gentleman who's now been tied to this. And it's going to be interesting to see how this boils out because, as you know, one of the things that Speaker Paul Ryan has been trying to do in dealing with budget deals is to create some pathway to citizenship,
yes,
i.e. the amnesty program, because establishment Republicans have basically sold the farm to corporate interests who want cheap sources of labor, and they don't care how they get it. Yes, I'm making an accusation,
and
I'm going to make a direct accusation on this because it's garbage. And Trump now is in the driver's seat. You know, we don't want to have a tragedy happen. We don't want people to lose their lives. We don't want to have terrorist attacks on American soil for this to happen. But if the only way to blow up an entrenched special interest who basically has greased the skids from both parties to get something to basically just benefit them and devil take the, you know, the after effects, who cares? then you know what? I'm glad that we have a president now who's willing to call it like it is and utilize the fact that we need to use this as a wake-up call. Because we need to wake up.
Yes.
We have far too many places and far too many politicians in this country who have gone to sleep. Now, I found it very interesting, and I sent this over to you last night, or early this morning, I forget what it was. Sometimes I get up way early and I start going through, I'm like, ooh, this would make good fodder for radio.
Yesterday was this morning.
That's right. But I found an interesting article where Senator Lindsey Graham, who was one of the preeminent never-Trumpers, as a matter of fact, he was one of Trump's opponents in the Republican presidential primary. He didn't do so very well, but even Lindsey Graham said that he actually gave kudos to President Trump because, and get this, now Chuck, this is the reason why I think that we have a shift coming. Even Lindsey Graham, one of the most establishment of establishment Republicans in the Senate, said Trump understands what this really is. It's a religious war. That's the first time a major politician has actually uttered that phrase in earshot of anybody who could put it in print.
I didn't really think I would hear that coming out of Lindsey Graham's mouth.
Oh, ever.
Because he and McCain and Flake and
Bob Corker and Dean Heller, and I mean, you can go down the list of, and the Murkowskis of the world and the Susan Collinses and the Olympia Snows and... Yeah, yeah, we all know who the squish moderates in the Republican Senate caucus, the Rob Portmans of the world, are all going to be like. But you're right. Lindsey Graham just broke ranks with his establishment buddies and has just now stated in unequivocal terms, folks, this is a religious war. This isn't, we got to worry about, you know, the rise of extremists in Islam. Now, he didn't say that. He basically just laid out, said Islam is a religion that demands complete subjugation and that kills people who don't submit. He's getting it. Now, that means that maybe some of the briefings on Capitol Hill are starting to sink in with some of these people. Because God knows they've probably had a number of briefings from various think tanks and various organizations trying to get the point across that you have to understand there is no such thing as a political war without there being a religious war. Because it's your belief system that drives your politics. The reason why you want to take land is because you're going to exercise dominion in some way over that land. You know, whether it's to take it for economic resources, like we saw with Russia trying to get into the Crimea, to the Black Sea to get a port. But that's still a religious viewpoint. You know, they believe that the Russian national interests are so important that it subjugates everybody else's rights of ownership. That's a religious viewpoint. Islam is full of religious viewpoint. If you do not submit to Islam and declare Allah to be God, then you are an infidel and you should either be dispatched or put into what they call demitude, which is servanthood or slavery.
Yeah, it's a form of, we'll let you exist if you acknowledge Allah and pay tribute.
Yeah. So, you know, there's this whole situation here where finally Trump has come out and he's saying what it is. And you notice he's not being shy, Chuck. He's using the term terrorist. He didn't have to wait for a briefing from the Justice Department or the FBI or the CIA, or he didn't have to, like, run it up and figure out exactly how it was going to play to the public and, you know, with a focus group. He just came out and said it. This was a terrorist. It's Chuck Schumer's fault because of the stupid diversity visa program. And folks, you need to start paying attention here because we need to change this whole thing. Now, where it will go to from there, who knows? Because you had, when this whole situation came up earlier about immigration, the immigration bill that was brought up in the Senate failed in the House after it passed the Senate back in 2013. This is the last time they really brought up immigration. You had 14 Republicans joining the Democrats in their majority to vote for expanding immigration. Now, this diversity visa program was something that Schumer got put into place back in 2010. That was when the Democrats held the chamber, and Barack Obama was in his first term as president, and they were bending over backwards to accommodate all of these countries that are basically majority Muslim with preferred immigration status. And it's coming back hard to bite us. Now, Chuck, you and I have both talked about on this program before other places where that's happened. You know, we've had everything from the Fort Hood shooting to the California shooting to the Orlando nightclub issue. Every last one of those has been, at some point, finally, when you get it ferreted out from all of the filters that tried to filter to keep you from learning it, that every one of those individuals had linkages back to Islam, a Muslim nation, and likely one of the quote-unquote radicalized sects like ISIS or Al-Qaeda or what have you. It can't get a whole lot clearer. But I never underestimate the ability for a politician to obfuscate anything that's as clear as glass into being as clear as steel. You know, you can't see through steel.
Right. You can see through aluminum, at least in Star Trek.
Yeah, that's true.
Transparent aluminum, if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yes.
And if you don't, Star Trek 5, or 4.
4, I think 4. It was, yeah.
Transparent aluminum. But no, this is we've been arguing this and arguing this and arguing this, and the fact is it's that over and over and over again, that argument has been ignored, and essentially anybody who employs it is accused of being a racist, an Islamophobe, blah 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 blah. It goes back to the name calling thing,
mm-hmm.
And what it really comes down to is that we oppose open borders.
Right
now. What do I mean by open borders? I mean just that, open borders where we don't vet people who come into the country. I have no problem with legal immigration. I do have problem with letting people in who essentially have the either connections to or have the potential to create connections to radical groups. And it's not just Islam. Let's not forget that there are other radical terrorist type groups out there that still have, for instance, Marxism. There are still European groups who are out there fighting for anarchy, Marxism, all kinds of things. But right now, the current danger that we have been not focusing on, because what's the first thing, Barry, that comes to your head when you hear about immigration?
Well, with me, I this whole argument over whether or not you call them undocumented workers,
well, yeah,
or if you call them illegal.
It's they're illegal. Let's not pull punches.
I had an old friend who posted a thing on Facebook where they tried to make the case that, you know, the act is illegal, but the person's not illegal. And I'm like,
stop.
Oh, no, no. I said, stop. No, no, no. I said, stop right there. The point is that the person committed the crime, and is,
yeah,
not a neutral body that an act was committed upon, because they tried to make the whole idea that, you know, somebody steals a can of soup, the can of soup is not illegal. And it's like, well, and if we were just talking about cans of soup, yeah, you'd be absolutely right, but we're talking about human beings who are actively and willfully breaking the law in order to come into this country.
There is a crime called possession of stolen goods.
Yes. But the point is that the goods are not illegal.
No.
They're illegally held.
That's right. They're illegally possessed. So, but the question I'm asking is, what countries do you think of when you hear illegal immigration?
I usually think of Muslim countries.
Okay. That's interesting that you think that, because you talk to the average Joe. What does he think about? He thinks about Mesoamerica.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Costa Rica, although people aren't leaving Costa Rica,
yes,
so much, and Belize, people aren't leaving Belize so much, but the fact is people think of these poor people who want to come in the country and just make a living and are and want to escape oppression, blah 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 blah. Okay, that's fine. But the fact is, people who are truly trying to get away from oppression do not come here and rent a truck and mow people down on a bike path. Those people are not seeking to get away from oppression. They are seeking to become oppressors. Now, how do you stop that? I was amazed today when I heard I was listening to Fox News while I was working on something else because my mother-in-law had it on in her apartment and I was in her apartment working on something else. And what did this guy say? He says the only way to really stop this is to try to create conditions where these people won't do this. No, that's not how you stop it. You stop it by not allowing them in the country.
That's thank you. That's the smart way.
And that's the problem. That's exactly what Donald Trump is being excoriated by the left and a lot of people on, supposedly on the right about is the fact that he wants to vet people before they come into the United States. Now, you can argue all you want about Donald Trump's has issues. Okay, fine. Name a president that doesn't. Now, is he sort of plain spoken in a New York sort of way?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Very much so. He's very plain spoken and very much in a New York sort of way. Now, what's interesting is, what did Donald Trump say this morning? Something I haven't heard a president say for decades, and that is, God is with you, talking to the victims.
Yes.
Barack Obama would not have said that.
He might have said, Allah is with you.
He wouldn't have said that either.
No, he wouldn't have.
No.
You're absolutely right. He wouldn't have said that either.
He was running away from that possibility as far as he could. I don't want to get into this, the Muslim and chief stuff.
Yeah, whether he's Muslim,
let's not go there.
No, that's good.
Because that's an argument that can't be won.
You're right. It can't be. And frankly, it's mostly a moot point at this point.
However, what's not a moot point is that a lot of this open border stuff was done under George W. Bush,
right,
and Barack Obama.
That's right.
And the fact is, look at the mess it's created. And it was done after 9/11.
Yes. It's funny because after 9/11, the Patriot Act was put in place, which limited the freedoms of law-abiding Americans.
Yes.
But yet all of this immigration stuff happened after that too, that basically created environments where more immigration, whether legal or illegal, started happening in the country.
Yes.
Riddle me this, Riddler. What makes sense about that?
Nothing makes sense about it, Barry. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. It's political correctness run amok in that we've got to show that we have no prejudice against anyone and therefore we need to open the borders to people who want to come in. Should we be opening the borders to true refugees? Well, yes, we should. And guess what? Refugees were specifically excluded during especially the last half of the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
Christians who were being persecuted in the Middle East. Iraq used to have a huge Christian minority. There are a few thousand left. There used to be somewhere around 1 million, I think, in Iraq. And believe it or not, Saddam Hussein protected them.
Yep, now, that's right.
Insofar as, you know, a dictator protects anyone, they were not especially persecuted.
Right.
Unlike now. The fact is, they're being openly persecuted. Were Syrian Christians protected? No, they were not.
Of course not.
No, they were, in fact, thrown to the wolves.
Now, the question, were Syrians protected? Sure. But you put that little extra identifier, and that's where the protection ended. Christians.
Yes.
Now, if they were Syrian Muslims, well, gee, we know about that. Ask Houston. Ask all the other places where the Syrian refugees came in mass quantities, welcomed by the Obama administration.
Yeah.
As long as they weren't Syrian Christians. There might have been a few who were in that mix, but by and large, those were Syrian Muslims that came into this country.
Exactly.
And as we've seen in some instances, not just in this country, but, you know, in Germany, in France, and other places where there's been uprisings and issues, most of the uprisings and issues have come since the Syrian immigration and have been tied to those immigrants who were let in as Syrian refugees.
Well, do you remember the boohoo stories about the boats coming over from across the Mediterranean and landing in Greece and in Italy and all the, and we just have to let these people in? When it turn, when you get to the bottom line, you know that they show the picture of the little dead child in the parents' arms, supposedly.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. Did that kind of thing happen? Yeah, it did. Now, does that mean that was the majority of it? No. When you talk to people who witnessed this, who can't, by the way, get past the gatekeepers on network news, you have to go out to alternative sources, sadly, to get that kind of stuff. What do you find? Full of military-aged men.
Yeah, absolutely.
Full of military-aged men who were radicalized and didn't want to be taken into the army, because the Syrian army, because Syria was trying to wipe out those guys and knew they would be discovered.
Yep.
And therefore were being quote-unquote persecuted by the Syrian regime.
Right.
Okay, that's not persecution. That is rooting out rebels in mm-hmm. your system. Now,
true.
What do we do about this as a culture? Well, we sit here and allow ourselves to be cowed into these emotional responses by photojournalism.
Yep.
And not look deeper into what is going on. And so we get guys like Senator Chuck Schumer from New York, who comes up with this lottery program to so we don't show prejudice to people who are going to get green cards. And what do we get? Well, we've now got people who are in here. And in fact, the whole lone wolf argument is a moot point.
Yes,
because these people are being trained to operate as one man cells.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, again, on Fox News this morning, as I listened, they said, look, this is virtually step-by-step instructions that were printed by an imam, I think in Syria, about how to do this job.
I'm sure that there was.
And in fact, they said, basically, go rent a truck and run as many people down as you can and then ram a bus or ram something else and kill as many people there as you can. And then let the cops take you out. Well, okay. He didn't die.
Yeah, much to his chagrin.
Yes. Although he, one of the reports I read today was that he was proud of his work.
Well, I'm sure that he was because, you know, Islam is also a merit-based religion. And
exactly.
So, therefore, the more chaos that he creates, the closer he gets to getting into heaven.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and that, again... That whole situation with it's a religious war is dead on. Because, Chuck, if you have somebody who thinks that their action in harming you is going to get them entry into paradise eternally, is there any way to stop that person?
Oh no.
Short of...
Not if they're a true believer.
Short of lethal force?
No.
There's not. There's nothing that will stop them. You can't be they won't be deferred by a strongly worded statement regarding immigration.
Yes, that's
they won't be deferred by a state policy that says that you as a private citizen can't legally own a handgun. They won't be deferred by the idea that something like as I saw some wag put out there, a dump stock, because it was a dump style pickup where you could lift the bed up.
Dump stock.
And so therefore we need to ban the dump stock because that's dangerous and people can get killed by it.
Killed 8 and wounded 11.
Yeah, 8 and 11. Okay, 8 and 11. I'd seen 14, I think. But anyhow, you can't write a law that will deter someone who is doing something on the basis of a deeply held belief.
Right.
Let's all get that clear in our heads right now. I don't care how much amnesty or goodies we throw in the pot. If people are coming to this country holding to a worldview and a religious sentiment that says anyone who is not X must submit or die, we will have more of these circumstances happening. And if we are still sitting there scratching our heads and rubbing our chins trying to figure out what their motivation was, because we're trying to spin it in a PC way in order to make it more palatable for the little sensitive souls in the liberal progressive movement, so that they don't feel offended that they're basically supporting their mortal enemy. And if you think about it, what's the one group that Muslim, Islam, true believers want to wipe out more than anybody else?
Oh, Christians.
No, think again. Jews.
Jews. I'm sorry. Yes.
Who screams the loudest against Trump's immigration policies? The Hollywood left.
The Hollywood left, who is...
And you'd think...
Not totally Jewish, overwhelmingly, yes.
But I'm saying you would think that the Jewish faith leaders would come out and say, hold on just a second, folks. Do you understand what you're dealing with? This is a religious battle. This is the sons of Abraham versus the sons of
Ishmael. Now, one thing we need to clarify is that, A, our Hollywood types that are of the Jewish faith actually faithful Jews?
Well, I don't know.
No.
Probably more not than so. I really don't know that to be the case.
How many of them are pro-Israel?
Well, very few of them. They're mainly pro-Palestinian.
There is a strong contingent, but it's very much anti-Israel, which is kind of weird. They're anti-Zionist, which I don't totally understand all the ins and outs of how that works. They'll come right out and just say horrible things about the Israeli Defense Force and that kind of thing. And even the Jews in the Jewish state, how many of them are actual faithful Jews? Israel's a secular state.
Yeah, they're a secular state, and I get that. But the point is that I'm saying they're faith leaders.
Yes.
Those who are supposed to be faithful. I don't see too many rabbis getting up and decrying the liberals trying to make our borders porous and let flow in thousands and thousands of, as you called them, military-ready age Muslim men into the country. This is not going to turn out well for people of of Jewish faith.
That's true.
More so than it probably will turn out.
Well,
bad
it's already
Christians.
It's already proving to be a problem, and I've always been surprised about, for instance, how well things are going in Minneapolis, because Minneapolis has a large Jewish population, and they've got a lot of Muslim Somalis coming in. And I'm guessing that there are some clashes. Now, here's the problem. We can't find things out. Jewish rabbis who are out saying things are considered outside the bubble and therefore worthy of being ignored.
Oh, well, that's probably true.
There isn't information. Nobody's interviewing them. The New York Times does not go out and seek out Jewish rabbis who are decrying Muslim immigration.
Well, you've got a good point there.
NPR isn't out seeking faithful Jews who are opposing. Now we know from the right side of the spectrum that there are faithful Jews who are conservatives,
yes,
who are deeply concerned about radical. They don't mind. A lot of them don't care about Muslim immigration so much as radical Muslim immigration.
And
there is a vast difference between those two things.
And I want to stop you right there, Chuck. I do not want to pick up the nomenclature of the left, because it was the left who decided to create this, what I would call a divergent definition. You have people who are of Islamic faith.
Yes.
And then you have people who are of the Islamic faith who take their faith seriously. Just like you have yes. nominal Christians and you have what they call true believers, you know, in Christianity as well. And those are people who understand how their faith tradition and their guiding, whether it's the Quran for Islam or it's the scriptures of the Bible for Christianity, or if it's the Torah for Jews, those who have studied those sacred documents, sacred to their religion, and believe that that is the guidestone for their lives and how they operate.
Yes.
Those people are worthy of the name of Muslim or Islamist. And I'd use Islamist versus Muslim.
Muslim, yeah.
Because many are Muslim by birth and ethnicity, but they're not Islamist by belief. They're, as you call them, the more moderate. They're not the extremes.
Yes.
I don't even want to use extreme Muslims or extreme Islam. It's either you're an Islamist or you're a Muslim. Just like you are a faithful Christian or you're a nominal Christian.
Christian, yeah.
You may show up at church on Christmas and Easter, and you may, you know, write something to, you know, whatever nonprofit you think is a great thing once a year.
What's the Protestant equivalent of a cafeteria Catholic? I'm saying. Yeah,
you know, it's the twice a year I have to make my appearance.
Yeah.
Christian. That during the 50 weeks of the year, they're basically on Sunday morning they're out mowing their yard or getting ready to watch football
or golfing or
getting over a hangover.
Yeah,
but on Christmas and Easter, because it's a family thing, they clean up and go to church. And then if you had a poll or a phone poll or anything, are you a Christian? Oh, yeah, I'm a Christian.
What's it mean? Yeah, I was born a Christian, and therefore I'm a Christian. Yeah, it's cultural Christianity.
Yeah.
Therapeutic
moralistic deism.
Therapeutic moralistic deism.
That's right. That's the phrase.
They're deists, not Christians.
Right.
They believe there's this guy out there who was Jesus, but we don't know for sure what he did.
Yeah. But I'm going to tell you the thing. The guys that rent the pickup trucks and run into crowds of people to kill as many as they can, shouting, Allahu Akbar, are
true
Islamists.
Yeah, they're true believers.
They're Islamists. To the nth degree.
Yeah.
Their imams in the mosques are Islamists. But they send out the guys, and even I guess most of the guys from Khair are Islamists. But what they do is they trot out the average Joe, I'm a cultural Muslim, but I love living in America and I really don't go into I'll pray to Mecca, but it isn't five times a day, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. Now there are Christians out there who are dealing with Islam in an attempt to, you know, look, our job as Christians is to proselytize.
To give the good news and to basically knock down arguments against it.
And there are guys out there who are doing just that and are catching flack for it from people inside inside the faith.
Oh yeah, we've talked about a little bit of that in the past too. So.
I'm kind of a big fan of a guy who's a Reformed Baptist,
James White.
So yeah. I would disagree with his take on baptism, but and a few other things. He's a little more too kingdom-y.
Yeah,
not too much so, but he has done important work.
True.
Dialogues with Muslims, because he says Christians don't really understand Islam and Islam and Muslims don't understand Christianity. They understand the caricatures. And I said, sure. Yeah, that to a large extent, that's true. So what did James White do? He went into a church and had an Islamic imam come in and they had a talk.
Dialogue.
They had a talk.
Dialogue.
It wasn't a part of a church service. It was just simply somebody made a church available, and they had this dialogue. Well, what did he get accused of? Oh, this is the worst kind of interfaith dialogue that you can possibly imagine. He's out there. He's helping Islam recruit people into the Muslim faith. And I'm like, look, If any Christian is willing to go over to Islam after what I heard discussed, he is not a Christian to start with.
He wasn't a Christian to start with. That's right.
Now, you think you got him inside the faith because you had him in a church? All you had was a guy who was warming a pew.
Uh-huh. And that's what you have in a lot of instances, are just people who are warming pews or sitting in the synagogues or in the mosques who, by and large, are already surrendered to the culture.
Yes.
Rather than surrendered to the faith. Now, again, if you look at it, the Jewish faith doesn't say to go out and kill everybody and put them under a sword. The Christian faith certainly doesn't go out and say kill everybody. It says, hey, we had one who died for you, so you don't have to, you know, in that respect. Well, you know, Chuck, I see all this, and again, I think that it's going to be incumbent upon our politicians to start recognizing the true extent of what they're dealing with. And this isn't something you can do in a 30-second soundbite. This isn't something you can do overnight, because you have to get serious. And honestly, for many of them, it means they're going to have to get more serious about their faith. Whether you believe President Trump is a believer, not a believer, you know, had a political conversion, true conversion, he seems more at ease and comfortable with the traditional outworkings of the Christian faith than any president I think we've had probably in the last 40 years. I mean, Ronald Reagan did an awful lot of stuff that I would consider to be part of the American civic religion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't say that in a mean spirit. I mean, I say that it was always couched. Trump is, that's the thing with having a guy who's unfiltered. He's also unfiltered in what he believes. And if he believes in Christianity, he's going to say it. I mean, look at what's happening in Alabama right now. You have a general election coming up at the beginning of December, next month, like 4 weeks from now. You have a Republican that the Republican establishment is scared to death of and running away from because he talks about God too much.
Exactly.
That's Roy Moore, who was the former Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. And he's running against a textbook progressive liberal in a guy by the name of Doug Jones, who has linked up with George Soros and his foundation and money and supporting a number of initiatives that are the progressive left, you know, he's their darling. He has come out and basically, you know, said that he's good with abortion at any time. He's become like the poster child for the radical left. And what's happening? Whereas the establishment Republican political thinkers, and I use that in air quotes because I'm not sure they're thinking
about it. Yeah, they can't see your fingers. I can. Yeah, you're doing the air quotes thing. Yeah.
The thinkers has said that, well, Roy Moore may be able to win a primary, but can never win a general election. He's too extreme.
Right.
He's too extreme. See, in other words, get it? See, because even Republicans do that to Christians. You're too extreme.
Yeah.
See, you actually apply
your faith.
That's the reason why I don't use that term, because they're not extreme. They're faithful. They're actual Christians. Roy Moore's an actual God-fearing, living, breathing, walking, and has a political pulse Christian. It scares him to death. So they said, oh, there's no way he can win. We're not going to put any money into it. You know, it's just too tight of a race. And, of course, first couple of weeks after the special primary, after Roy Moore had been bloodied by Mitch McConnell's Senate Leadership Fund money when they pumped $3.5 million.
$35 million.
Excuse me. Well, they directly on this one
directly,
ad.
Okay,
it was $3.5 million buy on this one ad. But yeah, they pumped in $35 million to try to keep Luther Strange in that office, and Moore walked away with it. It wasn't even close.
9 points.
9 points. Well, Doug Jones wishes he could get to 9 points.
Exactly.
Because the latest poll that came out from an independent research firm that wasn't associated with the Republicans or the Democrats in Alabama shows Roy Moore less than a month out from the election with a 17-point lead over Doug Jones. And it doesn't look like that gap's going to close anytime soon.
Oh, it's actually growing.
Because it was 11 points
last week. It was
11
points last week, 17 this week. Now, it's not going to get too much bigger than that, probably. Maybe 20.
It might get to 20.
It might. But that being said, what is Doug Jones doing? Doug Jones has been running as far to the left as he can.
Possible, because he figured Roy Moore is so far to the right that he'll scare middle-of-the-road Republicans, but then he's being an idiot then, so he should have come off like a centrist Democrat if he expected to pick up these squish establishment. I don't have any convictions other than just win, baby, Republicans.
He can't.
That's right.
You and I know why he can't. He can't because the Democratic Party is so radicalized that to get any money at all,
you've got to go as far left as you can.
When you've got the Democratic National Committee putting out flyers for open positions, and you've got people sitting on the committee who say, straight white men need not apply. We've got too many of those now.
Right. Yeah, you've got a major problem in the Democratic Party.
Yeah. In other words, you haven't said all come, all welcome, and apply for the job. They're saying you aren't welcome. It's bigotry.
They have a litmus test, is what they're saying.
It's a litmus test.
They have a litmus test, sort of like Chuck Schumer with his diversity visa program.
Yes.
It was that really wasn't a y'all come either. It was the we want to encourage this group of people to come over. Well,
exactly.
Like I said, it bit him. So here we have the situation that, you know, Christians need to step up and not be ashamed of their faith. And because, Chuck, as I'm saying here, Chuck, I think the tide is turning. I think that there has been so much piling on against people of faith, you know, with the middle-of-the-road, squish, rhino, Republican, establishment, centrist, whatever you want to call them. They're always saying that the, you know, anybody who held to like Roy Moore's position that God exists, he's sovereign, marriage is between a man and a woman, abortion is wrong, murder is wrong, and we need to protect our borders. Oh, that's an extreme position. That's outside the mainstream. No, it isn't. That's God's mainstream. That's where I want to be, Chuck. If I'm going to be in the middle of a stream, that's the stream I want to be in. They have to understand that the tide's changing. Now, I find it interesting, too, because... And this is going to lead into the other thing I was talking about, because now we're going to get to turkey time. Today's an interesting day. I mean, this Wednesday, and I'm over here in your studio because we're recording this live because I had a break between times at the State House. This morning, we had a hearing on heartbeat bill. Finally coming back up. Finally, after the governor vetoing it last December, we finally got House leadership to okay getting it into a committee and start getting hearings. So we get it in the hearing this morning. Of course, our paper of record in Central Ohio, the Columbus Disgrace, has this article that basically bears no resemblance to the truth about how contentious this fight was. I was there, Chuck. I was taking notes. There were three questions asked of the sponsor. Two of them were setups that really weren't questions. They were more the statements of the ultra-left-leaning members of the committee about how they didn't agree with her facts, although everything she had in there was actually medical information about the development of a fetus. Gee, you're going to question that fact. Okay, that's good. You keep doing that. That's great. And one was about, well, do you think that we shouldn't introduce bills or shouldn't hear bills if they're going to cost the state money to defend, which came from a Republican, which was a great setup. On the other end was like, I don't think that that's our call to make, is it? Our call to make is to bring those bills forward and to debate the policy issues and vote on policy. And if somebody out there wants to challenge them, then it's the Attorney General's responsibility.
There you go.
Defend them or not. So, you know, so you had that, of course, in Congress today on the Hill. This congressional version of Heartbeat had its first hearing today. Started at 11:30 this morning, and we're live feeding it down through C-SPAN.
I just read that was happening today.
It was happening today. Steve King from Iowa, he introduced the bill. It's House Resolution 490. Now, the House... The Ohio version is House Bill 258 for people who want to follow along. It probably won't get another hearing again until next year, because I'm not sure that there's going to be many more hearings of the Health Committee between now and the end of the year.
Nope.
Because they're kind of down on onesie-twosie days now going into the holidays, and then they'll pick back up in January. Well, that's all fine and well, but there'll be other things that people are going to be worrying about between now and then. And they've already started worrying. We talked about it last week. With the revelation that a senator, Cliff Height from Findlay, had resigned abruptly over allegations that he had sexually harassed a female staffer who worked with his office. Well, You know, he admitted he may have inappropriately given her a hug or something, and may have said a couple of things that were inappropriate. Then a couple 3 days later, the other shoe dropped, where it was a 5-page memo from LSC and it's from the director of the Legislative Service Commission, where they had taken a deposition of this staff person.
Deposition.
And it was an LSC staffer. I told you last week. You told me.
Well, yeah, we talked about this last week.
I told you my suspicion was it was an LSC staffer.
Go back and listen to the archives, principledpolicy.com. Yeah.
Explaining out the numerous times that this ex-senator had propositioned her to engage in inappropriate conduct with him, a married man, including some, shall we say, specific requests of her for him, and also noting that he'd had affairs before, so it wasn't any big deal. Well, then that leads that leads to a question of what else was going on, because this senator had had female staffers in his office who were young girls. Was there anything inappropriate that happened there? This is still going. The problem is the Senate can't do anything about Height now because he resigned.
He resigned, yeah.
So they can't actually exercise any discipline over him. Sort of like when somebody leaves a church because of a discipline issue and they run to a church that doesn't recognize
church discipline. Yeah.
You know, you got a serious problem there. Revelation hit this morning that either today as we're recording or later this week, there will be an announcement of at least 3 to 5 House members who will be resigning because of similar allegations. Now, we've been kind of paying attention. This is Wednesday afternoon. We've been kind of watching. They've been in session now because the session started at 1:30, where they're hearing a number of different bills in the House. But supposedly, this is going to be House members, and it's going to be at least 3 to 5 people who are going to be either asked to or are going to submit their resignation because there have been complaints filed against them for something similar. Now, Chuck, that starts to look like there may be a culture that has developed in the halls. Now, and I don't know how many of these are Republicans, how many of these are Democrats. I have heard it's going to be some from both parties. And it may be more heavily weighted toward the majority since they've got more members and there's probably more ways for people to get around and do things. But this is a situation where it will create, I think, a shift. Because, first of all, if you have that many people resigning now, there's going to have to be appointments made for their seats. But before that even happens, most likely there will be a challenge for who becomes the leadership in that chamber.
Yes.
Because whether or not, and House Speaker Cliff Rosenberger's name's been thrown in the mix, yes, he's part, no, he's not part, I don't know. I'll wait to find out. But even if he's not involved, his leadership may come into serious question if it comes to find out that these things had been going on and the
under
leadership
tutelage,
were aware of it.
Yeah. Yep.
And they did nothing about it. That could trigger a quick snap call for new elections for the Speaker of the House. And we know right now from what we've talked about before, there are two people who are eyeing it very closely. Ryan Smith from my district, who's the House Finance Committee chairman, and Larry Householder from Perry County, who was the former Speaker of the House, who left and was out for about 6 or 8 years and is now back. This may bode very poorly for Smith because he's considered part of that House leadership because he is the heir apparent to the Speaker. Now, does that mean he's involved in this? He may not be. But as they know, when mud splatters, what does it do, Chuck?
Yeah, it gets on everybody.
It gets on bystanders.
Yeah.
And the closer you're standing, the more likely you are to get hit. Ryan Smith is standing pretty close to leadership, okay? If this smears leadership badly enough, he could be the one taking a hit on this. And since Larry Householder is an old political, wise dog, as they say, he'll know when to bark. He'll know when to take the attack. And my guess is, I'm guessing maybe before the end of the year, if this thing breaks the way I've been hearing it's going to break, we may have a vote for the Speaker of the House coming up before January.
Wow.
Which would be that somebody would serve out the end of the term and then would have the inside for the next 2 years, because that's usually the way that works. So this would be like an early de facto decision-making on who they want to have as the next House Speaker, which wasn't supposed to happen until the end of 2018. It may just happen a year early because of all this.
Yeah.
Now, again, Chuck, I've been keeping tabs on a couple of the political websites to see if anybody is breaking anything else. The Disgrace, the Dispatch, had an article, so did the Cleveland Plain Dealer today, about one member who had had an incident, supposedly back in 2015, that he had been given sensitivity training for, but not officially through the House, is what I can, what I'm gathering. And the question remains, is he part of this new round of potential allegations? Because supposedly he had said something that was considered to be offensive and inappropriate around a female staffer, and that's the reason why he took this sensitivity training in order to make amends. Now, again, you know, this is not something that a lot of these people want to take home as their holiday message to their districts. And
hi, I'm in trouble for inappropriate behavior in my office.
And there's an awful lot of names that are floating around. And most of that is just rank speculation, but some of it may be closer to truth. I mean, I'll be quite honest with you. If you walk his halls long enough, you'll hear some of the most salacious rumors you've ever heard. And honestly, the more salacious they sound sometimes, Chuck, the more accurate they are.
Unfortunately,
and,
yes.
And that's really because I've heard one on one member that I hope to God above is not true. But if it's true, then that rumor was true back then, because possibility is that name's going to be in this mix too. And I'm going to tell you what, there are going to be an awful lot of people who are going to be shell-shocked over what may come out here. Now, what we're hoping is that there'll be full disclosure, that we'll get these, if these people have an issue, if they have a sexual addiction problem, because honestly, if half of what the LSC staffers deposition memo said was true, then ex-Senator Cliff Height needs to get
help. Yeah.
He is a sexual predator. This is not behavior for someone who holds himself up as a public representative or as a believer. These are the type of things that need to be addressed, and if it's evident that leadership in the chambers were aware of these issues and swept them under the rug in the interest of protecting their caucus, then you may have an awful lot of change at the leadership level, which honestly may be a remedy for many of the things that are not getting done right now.
Well, the swamp needs to be drained at the local level
as
well.
At the state level. See, that's the whole point. Everybody talks about draining the swamp at the local level, but if you refill the hole out of the state pond, and all you're putting in there is all of the
more swamp material,
more invasive species, it's doing no good. I mean, because really think about it. I mean, we just talked about the announcement about your congressman, who neither one of us are really comfortable with, and not from a salacious
point of view, but
from a political, bully kind of situation, who. He came up from the state level.
Yeah.
He was John Kasich's aide back when John was a legislator. And then he took the seat when John moved to Congress. And then he moved to up to Congress when John moved out. You see what happened? And we just talked about this earlier. This whole thing, we just read an article about John Boehner in retirement, and we'll talk about that one next week.
Yeah.
But one of the key nuggets was the current Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, who took the job after saying he didn't want it, after Boehner, we kind of realized that he was lying, because he had been a protege and been groomed. He started as a college student working for Boehner's campaigns.
Yeah, you have to look at these guys' pedigree. You have to.
Because they're going to be the ones who are going to be taking over the reins as this good old boy network continues on. It's when you have situations like this that shake everything up that change actually happens. That's the same thing that Trump's looking at with this whole thing with the attack in New York City. He is now going to have, things are getting shaken up, and that may mean changes are coming for how we handle immigration. It may also mean changes are coming for how we're handling state-level issues at the State House should this develop as deeply as it sounds like it's developing.
Well, okay. We'd love to go further into this, but we can't because we're out of time. If you want to hear about some of the things that we have mentioned that we've talked about in the past, www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And we would ask that you join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.